say?
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this coop. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
With Rod Babers and Patrick Davis.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
Is there a problem back there?
HornFM.com and on the Horn app, The Horn, where Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast, the Monday fun day edition of the Rodcast. We got a lot to get into on the show. Of course, plenty of Longhorn football. Longhorns will be in the SEC title game to face the Georgia Bulldogs. We'll get into that, of course, and look ahead. But, of course, reviewing the Longhorns, just a dominating defensive performance against the Aggies on the road. We'll talk about it, break down all the details. We'll hear from Steve Sarkisian to hear his thoughts about the big win for the Longhorns over the Aggies. We'll also discuss some of the standout performances and performers from that Texas A&M game. Get into some of the NFL action over the weekend, over the holiday weekend. Hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving holiday. We'll talk about the Texans. Texans continue. They are who we thought they were, even when they win over the Jags. We'll get into that. We'll talk about the Dallas Cowboys and their Turkey Day win as well. Get into that a little bit. There's a ton of college football discussion to get into, a ton of NFL news, notes, and nuggets to address from all the NFL action over the holiday weekend. We got your usual favorites coming up on the show. We got Who Said That. We got the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. We also have Off the Record. We got What the Facts, What the Stats. Also, a big announcement on the show today, too. We'll have that coming up. So we got a lot to address. Before we do any of that, let's introduce you to the rest of the crew. He's one of the hardest working members of the ARN family. Got a hustler spirit, period. Not sure what he's paid, but pretty damn sure the man is underpaid. Ain't no 401k for this hustler, and he's a hustle man of many talents. It is our friend, co-host, and neighbor. It's Patrick Davis, y'all. What's going on, Patrick? How you doing, brother?
Oh, I'm having a good old Monday. Glad to have that little break there. Enjoy some turkey and some family and some friends and have a good old time over that Thanksgiving holiday. I hope everyone had a good Thanksgiving. Rod, I hope you had a good Thanksgiving as well and got some...
It was nice.
Got some good turkey and sides and all the good stuff going on. We got the my mom makes a dressing, and she made the habanero dressing. It was very good, spicy.
Ooh,
nice spicy
like that.
Dressing. Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of that over the holiday. So it was a good time. And then yeah, anytime you get to watch Texas beat Texas A&M, it's a fun game.
It's back, baby. Yeah, that old feeling is back, too, when you can dominate the Aggies and also enjoy your holiday weekend. Yeah, no, I'm with you. That was great. Glad you got a chance to enjoy some some good stuffing. Yeah, we had some holiday. My mom makes a good seafood dressing for the for our fried turkey. Oh, yeah, it's good. That Cajun style.
There you go.
It's always really good.
I like it. Let me introduce my co-host. He's a proud alumni of DBU. He's got more papers than Dunder Mifflin and watches more film than Siskel and Ebert. He is a new Rod, father of Austin Sports Radio, Mr. Rod Babers.
I appreciate the intro. I hope everybody actually had a great Thanksgiving holiday. Of course, the Longhorn did because they got a win over the Aggies. Of course, we'll talk a ton about that and give you our thoughts about the game. We'll get to your Horn headlines here in just a second. But let's talk about that game just for a second and what I think is interesting about now we're totally done with the season, so we know exactly what this team is. And I predicted they'd be 11-1. I did at the beginning of the season. We made our big prediction at the beginning of the season. I did actually say that I think they beat Georgia, and I was when we made our weekly prediction at the beginning of the season. I had them 11-1. I had their loss to Georgia. That was probably when I was at my at my most sane. I think I was caught up drinking the Kool-Aid like everybody else when they faced Georgia. We all know how that turned out. But I had them 11-1. I will admit the way that we got to 11-1 did not at all look like any of my predictions or prognostications. And I don't think it did for anyone, really. I don't think anybody saw the 11-1 looking like this. And, you know, it kind of reminds me like my life, I always thought I'd be married with a family at one point. Did I think I'd get married, at like 40 something years old or something? Probably not. I think I become a dad the first time at 43 years old? Probably not. Right? So it didn't happen the way I thought. I thought I'd be an NFL player for 10 years. Didn't work out the way I thought. Did I get to the NFL? Yeah. But did it happen the way I did it? Did the journey look the way that I envisioned? Probably not. Right? And I think that's the lesson, really, that you take from the season for the Longhorns. Yeah, you got to 11-1, got to the SEC title game, but looked nothing like any of us thought it would look. Right? And did you envision the Texas defense being the best defense in the country and potentially one of the greatest defenses in the history of Texas football? Did anybody see that coming? We knew the defense would be improved. Nobody saw it being that good. Did we see anybody see Gunnar Helm being the leading receiver? Anybody? Anybody see that?
Nope.
Anybody him see?
No, I'm pretty sure we had conversations about, was Gunnar Helm going to be the guy, or was it Juan Davis, or was it Amari Nyblak?
Yeah, exactly.
I believe our thoughts at the beginning of the season were, I don't know if he can create separation.
Yep, don't know if he can win one-on-ones. And yeah. Now he's hurdling guys and mossing guys. Didn't see that coming. Right? Did anybody see the Trey Wisner being the bell cow running back? I mean, he was third or maybe even considered fourth somewhere on the depth chart when the season started with C.J. Baxter. And remember, Jaden Blue was going to be the catalyst for the running game at one point. And we saw Jerry Gibson rush for 100. Oh, man, Jerry Gibson may end up being the freshman phenom for this group. And it's like, nope, it's good old dependable Trey Wisner, who has rushed for 344 yards in the last two games and become a workhorse running back for you at almost 60 carries in the last two games. Like, anybody see that coming? Anybody? Nope. Did not see that coming. Anybody thought the run game basically at toward the end of the season would be what you rely on to help you win games and not Quinn Ewers, third-year starting quarterback in the system, not all the elite weapons in the passing game? They, you know, they're, I'm not saying that they're not explosive or prolific. They are. But they're not as trustworthy, I should say, right now as the running game, because that's what Sark has leaned on, and that's what he's trusted to win him the game versus Kentucky, trusted to win him the game versus A&M on the road in a hostile environment. It was a run game that he leaned on. It is that it did not just, it didn't look the way I thought it would look. That's all. Some of it did. Some of it did. I mean, some of it looked exactly like we thought it would look. But it's interesting that they still got here to 11-1, even though I just think it's a very different product. And at this point, who cares? Right? It doesn't matter. They still got to their. They still achieved their goal to get into the SEC title game. And yeah, they end up losing to Georgia. But now you get to avenge that loss. And remember, my prediction: next couple of years, you see Georgia, and I don't know if it's going to happen because Georgia's dynastic run is deteriorating quicker than I thought. I thought they'd have more kind of staying power. I don't know if Georgia will. But remember I said you're going to see them maybe four times over the next 2 years. So this will be the second time in this year, and I predicted you – of course, you're going to see them in the regular season next year, but I predicted you'd see them again in the postseason next year. And it may be even in the playoffs if Georgia could – you know, start playing consistently. Carson Beckley is playing better, and that defense is good. They just match up really well with Texas. You know, we can talk about that later on in the show. But I'm glad Texas gets a chance to avenge that loss. It's just like I said, it didn't look the way I thought it would look. 11-1 didn't. I will admit that. No. I was wrong about how it would look.
No, if you told us at the beginning of the season that progressively our totals, our final scores were going to go down and down and down, you'd be like. Yeah. Oh, man, there's going to be regression and, you know, the season's going to wear on them and you're not going to say, I don't know, you're just going to start playing extremely complimentary football and just lean on Trey Wisner to run the ball over and over again and just understand that your defense is playing elite football right now. Your defense goes up and does not allow a point in the final game of the season. I mean, there's 7 points, but that wasn't the defense's fault.
No, I mean, it's amazing. Like I said, I did not think – I thought the defense would be good and improved. Didn't think they would be the best defense in the country.
No.
Like I said, top five defenses in the history of Texas football. That's how good – because they did – the running backs for A&M, they only had run – they didn't have a run over – a rush over 5 yards. No running back had a run over 5 yards. I mean, they allowed 4.3 yards per play. The Aggies guys going into that game, I don't think people realize those two goal line stands. First of all, how often do you get multiple goal line stands in a game?
Yeah.
You usually don't get a chance to do that because the coach probably wouldn't go for it multiple times. Like,
yeah.
I get it. Yeah, you can talk about that. But that Aggie red zone offense, guys, it was a top 10 red zone offense going into the game. That was a really good red zone offense. Colin Klein, remember, even at K-State a couple years ago when Texas played them, they were an elite red zone offense. They going into that game, I wrote the number down because I saw it on the broadcast, and I was like, that's pretty elite. They had scored on 43 of 45 red zone attempts going into that game. They had 35 touchdowns, 10 field goals, red zone attempts. They had only two red zone trips where they come away with 0 points. And you had two in the same game, in their biggest game of the year. Texas shut them down in the red zone, goal line stand. That's tough. That is, like I said, I'm sure, you know, this documented, it's happened before. That was really impressive. Among the moments in the game that stood out the most, that I don't know if two moments stand out more. And on the last one, where Ethan Burke gets the tackle for loss, honestly, the truth is, if he didn't get it, there were like two other guys that were going to get it.
Yeah.
Alfred Collins was back there. Vernon Broughton, we'll talk about it's already been Broughton. he was back there in the backfield. It didn't matter. I mean, Ethan Burke made a great play, but there were several guys that were going to get it. So that was and some people were getting on Mike Elko for going for it. I don't. I think that was a tip of the cap to the Texas defense. I think when he went for it lately, I think he knew, because he was 17-7, some people thought, well, why not kick the field goal there and you keep hope alive? In my opinion, I don't think he believed he was ever going to get down there again. They only had one drive where they got down there, and that was the first drive of the game, and that was their game planning for the entire week. I mean, that was their right. That was their script. That was their money plays that they were like, all right, these plays will work versus Texas. After those plays were done and Texas made adjustments, they didn't get much of anything at all.
Yeah.
So I think he figured after the punt block, we're not getting back down here.
Yeah.
I gotta go for it here. Who cares if that's the game? And he said it in the guys. You know what his quote was in the post game. This is what the coach said about him. He said that hats off to them. They physically annihilated us. How often do you hear a coach say they physically annihilated us? So even Sark said we really thought we controlled the game. We quite frankly dominated the game.
Yeah, I mean they did.
They did. Now we'll talk about why they only won by 10 points. But remember, Ugly Duckling. Let's go back. Ugly Duckling. Yep. You got to stop looking at this team as a team that is led by the offense and that is a elite offense complemented by the defense. No. It is an elite, all-time great defense that is complemented by the offense. When you look at it like that, a 17-7 win is like, well, that's right on point. That's exactly how we're supposed to be winning games. Yep, double-digit win. Yep, damn right. 17-7. Glad the offense could put up 17 points. There you go. That's what I'm talking about. If you look at it like that, you'll have a better weekend instead of stressing out about, well, why can't we get to 30 points? Well, as Patrick mentioned, hey, nobody thought the point totals would start to decrease as the season went on for Texas offense. But that's where we are. But still, where we are is in a position to win a national title.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful swan. It's just a defensive one.
Yeah. No, and I mean, yeah, when you look at it and go, you only got 17 points, but you controlled the clock for 35 minutes of the game. You were able to slow them down enough that they weren't able to get explosive plays really on top of you a bunch. So you did what you needed to do to play complimentary football. And that's what Sark wanted to do going in this game. Let's just get through it. Let's not try and go into a shootout where anything can happen. Let's go play what we've done the best, which is trust our defense. And you wouldn't expect it, but man, it's great to see the defense step up in that moment.
Yeah, the defense was, I mean, do you think about it? You've played your three rivals, none of them at home, all of them on the road, played Arkansas and A&M at their place, played Oklahoma at a neutral site, and you allow just 7 points on offensively.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I mean, and that's the good part too about it. You can go into a Kyle Field and that noise doesn't really matter on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-mm. So you get rid of that huge factor of all this hype and everything about Kyle Field. You take that away a little bit when you're talking about being a defensive led team, because now they're trying to be quiet for their offense and the crowd is getting too loud for their own offense and kind of screwing them up, and your defense is ready to go. And you just saw that was the game plan it felt like going in, because they were running the ball a lot. And then once they realized you know, when you miss a couple red zone opportunities, those turnovers, Sark just said, no, we're screwing up a little bit too much. Put the ball in Trey Wisner's hand. Just trust Trey Wisner.
Trust in Trey. I mean, hell, I'm going to call him Quintravion for the rest of the show. He deserves it. His mama called him Quintravion. We going to call him Quintravion. I mean, that's what kind of respect the man deserves. Or Mr. Wisner. I heard my man Brian Robeson say that. We call him Mr. Wisner. That was a grown man performance versus Yaggies, versus a really good defensive front. NFL guys on that defensive front in their place. And we'll talk about individual performances here after the Horn headlines. But Trey Wisner is where we'll start, because that was spectacular. It really, really was. And he continues to be, you know, one of the more trustworthy players on the team. And once again, that game felt like it was one of those games that came down. I talked about this in Kentucky. It came down to trust, right? And what are the most – through 12 games now, we know. What can you trust on this team? Defense, number one. We'll show up every game, no matter the circumstance or the situation. The defense will be there, no doubt. Now, right now, for me, honestly – Trey Wisner and I'll say Gunnar Helm. I'm going to put Gunnar Helm up there second, just because Gunnar Helm has been there all season. All season long, Gunnar Helm's your leading receiver, guys. Receptions and receiving yards. It's Gunnar freaking Helm. He's your most explosive receiver. It's Gunnar Helm. Nobody saw that coming, but he's been consistent all season long.
Yep.
Honestly, right now, consistent is Matthew Golden.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the wide receivers, and this is how deep you are at wide receiver. You get flashes from guys. Like right now, Ryan Wingo's coming back into the fold, right? He got a couple of big plays in the A&M game. You're so deep at wide receiver. Matthew Golden's the only one that's been consistent all year long. Remember, at first, we didn't see DeAndre Moore. Couldn't get DeAndre Moore a target in the game, even though he was working hard, you know, doing, obviously, as Sark said, doing all the right things. It just, the ball didn't find him. Didn't start to find him. All right? So he had his time where you couldn't find him within the passing game. And now it's Isaiah Bond who's kind of gone missing in the passing game. It's because there are miscommunications. Maybe it's his injury, whatever. They can't get the chemistry down. You know, he's making mental errors, whatever it may be. He's kind of gone missing in the passing game lately. And Sark may force feed him the football. Who knows? Remember, Ryan Wingo went missing for a while.
Yeah.
After the Vanderbilt game. Mm-hmm. He was like, man, where's Ryan Wingo? We thought he was going to step up. Nope. Went about 3-4 games where you just didn't see Ryan Wingo very much in the offense. You know, it's interesting, like a lot of different, Silas Bolden flashes, and then flashes for one game, oop, then you don't see him again. Flashes for a player, oop, don't see him again. I mean, that's how deep the wide receiving core is. And then you just, Lou held Jonte Cook, remember? One time, we thought Jonte Cook was going to be in the circle of trust, and then he fades, and then he's out.
Yep.
like, the wide receiving core, it's deep, but I think one of the byproducts of that depth is that you really never know, because Sark has expanded the circle of trust. You really never know who's going to flash and who's going to go kind of get on a heater with the wide receivers. Matthew Golden has been consistent the entire season, game one, all the way throughout the season. He ends up being the most consistent guy. So he earns the trust, and I think at this point Trey Wisner in the backfield has earned it as well, because we thought C.J. Baxter would be the guy. He ends up getting hurt. That's not C.J. Baxter's fault. And we thought, oh, Jaden Blue's going to be the catalyst for the offense because he was, you know, leading the team in, you know, rush attempts and second in targets at one point. Turns out it's not him, because you can't trust his hands in ball security or in pass protection. Same thing with a young Jerry Gibson, even though he shows, you know, some really, really exceptional ability as a runner. And Trey Wisner ends up being your guy. Not that he doesn't have great traits. His vision is exceptional. His patience is like next level. His ability to just kind of wait for the blocks to align. That's why those zone blocking schemes and those counters work really well with him. But his burst, his, you know, body, his, we talked about this a lot with wide receivers, but his body control is amazing too. He does a really good job of being able to avoid tackles and evade defenders. And it's not necessarily with elite change of direction, not necessarily with Jaden Blue's elite speed. He just does it with a savvy, just kind of, I think it really is kind of a savvy intelligence to his running style, savvy patience to his running style, where he sets defenders up the right way. And then it's the O-line. The O-line's the fifth most trustworthy thing on the team behind, and I'll say behind, it's along with, I should say, defense, Gunnar Helm, Matthew Golden, Trey Wisner, and the O-line. What else can you trust?
No.
It's everything. I'm not saying that the other stuff isn't good, but I don't know if you can trust. Can you trust kicking game?
No.
Can you trust Bert Aubin?
No.
Can you trust kicking game? Sure. Can you trust Quinn? I love Quinn. Quinn's awesome. I don't know if you can just trust Quinn. He was in the first half. He looked amazing.
Yeah.
He looked like Michigan Quinn in the first half. Third quarter, some, you know, in the red zone, looked careless with the football. Hey, it's okay. A&M made big plays, but I don't know if you can trust that, because you've had two disastrous third quarters in a row where the run game has had to really come stop the bleeding for you. And so, like I said, I love Quinn. I think Quinn has a really high ceiling and great. I don't know if you can trust him. Half the fans, or at least a third of you guys, want to see Arch in there. By the way, love the Arch package, which we'll talk about.
Yeah, love that. And, I mean, hey, we'll throw in, though, one thing I love about Jaden Blue is he's somehow now the guy that's, like, good for basically one or two big plays a game. Where you just go, you just put him in, and he just does. And so not every play is going to be great, but he had the catch of the game. It was a hell of a catch in the back of the end zone.
That was amazing.
And so, you know, he doesn't necessarily break the big run, which he's done several times this season, where all of a sudden you need a big play, and he gets 25 yards or so on a run. But this one is he gets in the back of the end zone, and a guy who hasn't been the most sure-handed all season, especially on those wheel routes, goes in the back of the end zone and makes an insane catch. So you get to see that, you know, you get to have the guys that are filling those smaller roles, which is where you want Wingo to get back into and Bond to get back into. Of we need two or three plays a game. We can get two or three plays a game out of you, then we'll be golden offensively. And then Gunnar Helm's going to carry it, and Trey Wisner's going to carry it. We just need a few plays. A few plays from you guys, from the bunch of guys that all have exceptional talent, and it's just not as consistent. Just a few plays out of you, and then we know who, as you said, who our workhorses are and who is going to be old reliable.
Yep. Yeah. And it's crazy. You're like, yeah, we can Gunnar Helm and Trey Wisner will carry it.
Yeah.
Listen to those. Listen to that. Listen to what you just said there. I know, but I agree with you. I think you're right on the money there. There's no doubt.
But that's also, right. but that goes into the culture of what Sark's built of. Those are guys that he just taught you that all you heard about was in camp and in practice. These guys are earning playing time. These guys are earning it. These guys are working harder than everybody else in practice, or at least as hard as everybody else in practice. These guys are going for it. And then you see what the results of that are, and pushing that forward for every player on that team to look at who are the guys that were standing out in practice. Those are the guys that are carrying this team right now because they are doing all the little things right. So if you want to be that, this is what you got to do. The mold's been cut.
It is. It's like I said. I agree with you. It's definitely an example of why his culture works.
Yeah.
We've seen that over and over again. But Trey Wisner's an example of it. Gunnar Helm's a great example of it too. I mean, we're mentioning these guys as leaders and the most consistent, trustworthy elements on the team. All right, so we'll come back. We'll talk some more about the standout performances. First, let's get our horn headlines. Then we'll come back and talk about some of the individual standouts from that Texas A&M game. But first, let's get updated, educated, and informed with all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the horn headlines.
All right, your horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Rockets stopped the Thunder 119-116 yesterday with Fred VanVleet having his season high of 38 points. The Mavericks played well in Luka Doncic's return from injury, winning 137-131 with Luka scoring 36 points. And the Spurs edged out a 127-125 win over the Kings with Victor Wembanyama getting a triple-double with 24 points, 13 rebounds, and 11 assists. In college basketball, Texas men's beat Delaware State 90-68 over the weekend. Trey Johnson led the Horns in scoring with 21 points, and Caden Chedrick added a double-double with 14 points and 11 rebounds. They're back in action Wednesday against NC State. And the Longhorn women took home the Gulf Coast Showcase Championship, knocking off number 12 West Virginia 78-73 in the final game, led by Aaliyah Moore with 20 and Madison Booker with 19. Their next matchup comes Thursday against number 3 Notre Dame. In college football, Texas finished regular season play with a 17-7 win over Texas A&M. The win propels Texas into the SEC championship game on Saturday in a return matchup with Georgia. Elsewhere, Michigan upset Ohio State 13-10. Syracuse took down Miami 42-38. And South Carolina knocked off Clemson 17-14. Texas moved up to number 2 in the latest AP poll. In the NFL, the Cowboys got their first home win of the season on Thanksgiving, beating the Giants 27-20 with DeMarvion Overshawn getting his first pick six of his career. The Texans held on to pick up a 23-20 win over the Jaguars after a late hit took out Trevor Lawrence in the game. And Joe Mixon rushed for over 100 yards in the game again. Tonight, the Browns take on the Broncos in Denver on Monday Night Football. And that is your Horn Headlines.
I thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. I appreciate those. All right, let's talk about some of the individual performances that really helped Texas get that win versus A&M. I think if you're going to start, you start with defense. And there's no doubt Vernon Broughton, it's already been Broughton, had a hell of a game. I mean, I think that's the best game he's ever played in his career. When you have your best game of your career in the biggest games of the year, oh, man, that's legendary stuff, right? That's iconic stuff. And that's what happened with Vernon Broughton. Biggest game of the – one of the biggest games of the year, Texas A&M, and he ends up with four tackles, two sacks, career high for him, four quarterback pressure. He had a fumble recovery, three defensive stops. There was one drive where he just wrecked the whole damn drive, first, second, and third down. He made all, I think, plays on all three of those downs and essentially just wrecked the A&M offense. And they were. It seemed like they didn't double team. I said they were double teaming other guys, maybe double teaming Alfred Collins. Man, he made them pay for that. There's no doubt. So Vernon Broughton's probably the top of the list of standout performers. And I mean, he wasn't even the highest graded. I believe Pro Football Focus has Leung Lafau was the highest graded Longhorn in that win on defense, and he just led the team in tackles. He was awesome. And LaFalle was the second highest graded linebacker in the entire country for week 14. And he's not even one of the guys that I think is getting a lot of love from the Longhorn faithful with this. So it's Vernon Broughton, Leung Lafau, Michael Taft. Michael Taft had a hell of a game. Yep. That interception that Michael Taft had, I'll break it down in a little bit more detail. Maybe later on when we get into some of the X's and O's of this matchup and Rod's rant. But Michael Taft had, I mean, you might be talking about one of the best performances that we've ever seen from a defensive back at this point. I mean, that was an unbelievable play by hit. That interception was an unbelievable play. It really was. Individual, but also football IQ-wise, let's say. We'll talk about that coming up a little bit later on. So he's in that conversation. Trey Weisner, I think, I don't know if one individual had, Vernon Broughton included, had more of an impact on the game than Trey Weisner. Here's my Trey Weisner stat that I love, and shout out to John Bianco, because I believe that's, John Bianco's where I first saw the stats and the breakdown, and there's not a better source out there. If you go look at the best rushing performances by Longhorns versus the Aggies, Sed Benson, who I played with, but not that year, 2003, he had the most, 283 yards. Versus the Aggies in College Station. Ricky had 259 in Austin in 1998. Earl had 222 in College Station in 1977. And then Quintravion Weisner has 186 yards. So he's behind Sed Benson, Ricky Williams, and Earl Campbell for the most rushing yards versus the Aggies, and the third most for a Longhorn at College Station. Ricky Williams also had 183 at College Station in 1997. Dude, look at that list. He's on a list with Sed versus the Aggies, Sed B, Ricky, Earl. that's amazing. And he's rushed for 344 yards in the last two games combined. Almost 6 yards per rush. Almost 60 carries. Workhorse stuff in the last two games. And remember, he's your guy that basically helped you win. He's maybe the MVP of the Oklahoma game. Other than on offense. I know Anthony Hill had a hell of a game that game. But on offense, your offense, really, you don't have much without Quintravion Weisner. In that game, remember he breaks your three runs. He did have the fumble that Silas Bolden recovered, but still, I mean, he was the one, the catalyst in the run game and on offense for you. So you're two of your top three rivals. Quintravion Weisner was the offensive MVP in those games.
No, I mean he's come to another level right now. That's it's just so fun to watch, and he stepped up in these big games. as well as he just said. And, I mean, just watching his progression and when you had a running back room, I think we all thought it really felt like Jaden Blue was going to be the guy. This is his year to break out. He is a guy that had the most potential to be a game-breaker type running back. But we know he had troubles holding on to the ball. He was, you know, not necessarily cool, still have trouble getting through the, you know, run through tackles and just consistently picking up yards. And then you get Jarrett Gibson and you feel early there, okay, maybe it's a freshman this year. And he goes off and, you know, he has issues fumbling the ball. Trey Wisner just slow and steady wins the race. And that was it, is he just stuck to the plan and kept going. Yep. And at a certain point, the offense kind of shifted around him. And, you know, that's one of those pieces. Credit to Sark as well to be able to shift and form the offense into the play sheet, all of a sudden having more Trey Wisner plays on it each and every week and realizing these are the plays that Trey does and working with Trey to understand how to run in each of these different concepts he's putting out there, because it's not easy for every running back. We know we've seen, you know, even in the NFL, you see running backs that you put in a different coach and they can't do anything. Mm-hmm. Trey Wisner, it feels like whatever kind of run you're calling, he's at least going to get you a few. And if you get the right play on him, he can go pick you up some big runs. But, yeah, they were taking chunks out of the end of A&M at the end of that game where you just needed, hey, man, we need eight. Okay, no problem. We'll go get eight.
And they were dropping like flies. And A&M guys, they just kept – that's how physical that offensive line was being. They were punishing the Aggies. The Aggies were, you know, coming off the field, checking out of the game. And this is because Texas was imposing their will in the run game. And probably an extraordinary performance we did not mention, Trevor Goosby.
Yeah,
Kelvin Banks goes down in that game.
That's very true.
Your best player, period. Offense or defense, best player is Kelvin Banks. Top five, top ten pick. He goes down early in that game. Doesn't come back in the game. You put in Trevor Goosby, who's what is it, a sophomore, what Trevor Goosby is. Hadn't had any real action at left tackle versus NFL guys on the road, hostile environment, the most hostile environment you've played in all year, and he's going up against NFL caliber guys, and not only does he hold his own, there's not much, if any, drop-off. How the hell is that possible with with a top five, top ten pick leaving the game and you putting in the backup and there isn't much significant drop-off at all?
No. Shout out to Kyle Flood and the Pancake Factory for building it. Because, I was having conversations with some people, with some friends about, you know, even getting that and just being a, you know, being a sports fan. You start to worry and you go, man, as good as this O-line's playing, you got to remember this is a very veteran O-line. It's going to look a lot different next season. But that gives you that feeling, okay, I think we could be in good hands going forward when you see that performance. And we'll say Kyle Flood, and then I'll bring it up again, Kenny Baker, man. When you see Vernon Broughton have the game he had and Ethan Burke have, you know, get the big play and everybody started to play on that D-line, that once again you see that the D-line is in good hands right now with Alfred Collins having the season he's having and then Vernon Broughton to realize the clock's running out on him to have his big game and takes it at the right time against A&M and just plays a great game. It's great to see those guys performing at this level that, you know, we weren't sure that this defensive line going into the season. That was a giant question mark of inconsistency is the main part from Alfred Collins and Vernon Broughton. That even though you knew they could be good, could they be good for an entire game? And, I mean, that's your proof right there that you go up against an A&M team and out-physical them and just don't allow them really anything all game long.
Yep. No, I totally agree. And then I think the other guys just look at Matthew Golden. He had only three catches, but they were huge, massive. He had that 44-yarder. He had another like big play late in the game, that 20-something yarder late in the game, another explosive play. Gunnar Helm, 6 receptions, 56 yards. So, like, every time they needed a big play in the passing game, Gunnar Helm showed up for him. So they had so many guys that just really stepped up, and that's why I got a lot of faith in this team, even though we'll get to the bad. There was some bad, of course. Yep. We'll talk about that third quarter. We'll get to it, but there was so much good. Like I said, I look at this team differently, and that's why I usually start reflecting on how the really many ways that this team can win games, and we saw it again here, but it's led by the defense. and how malleable their blueprint to win is. All right, we come back. We'll talk about more Texas A&M, but we'll hear from Steve Sarkisian and get his thoughts, get the head coach's thoughts about that win, and also we'll get into it. We got to make a big announcement on the show. All right, that's coming up here as well in this hour. We'll do that and more right here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis and Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get back to some Texas football conversation behind the burnt orange curtain. So Sark has, I think now, of course now, 12 games in the end of the season here, realize exactly who his team is, what their identity is, and I think he's a little surprised, like we talked about, as to how they got to 11-1. Now, I don't think it's what he envisioned originally either. And, you know, the run game now reaching a point of maturity at this point of the season, though, that is a nice plot twist that for Texas. That at this point now, your running game is better than it's been all year long. You know who your bell cow running back is. You know what your core concepts are in the running game. You have a back, as Patrick mentioned, now that can run, that can execute the variety in your run game. Your wide zone, your split wide zone, your inside zone, your counters, your buck sweeps. He can run almost everything. Jaden Blue, I don't think, was that guy. Jaden Blue, although explosive and dynamic, I don't know if he was compatible with all of your run schemes. Trey Weissner has proven that he is. So your run game is now reaching a point of maturity at this point in the season. We'll see, because the ultimate test will be, the final will be versus Georgia. You can run versus Georgia. You can run versus anybody in the country, especially in a neutral site. So we'll see. But running against A&M on the road at their place, being able to dominate and impose your will in the running game, that is not something that I thought this offense was capable of. And so it is a real pleasant surprise. So here's Sark talking about, you know, the identity of the offense and, you know, when the run game is working, how it opens up so much other stuff for the offense, so many other elements for the offense.
Yeah, we're just so much more well-versed, you know, when we can run it. You know, you saw today a couple of the play-action pass things. We were able to now throw some balls down the field and take a few shots. And you know, we hit two, we got a pass interference on another one. And that's, you know, you're not going to hit them all, but we have to be able to play that style of game. And I think the versatility that we have starts with our ability to run the ball, because that sets up the screens, that sets up the perimeter stuff, the advantage throws, then the play action pass. And so the run game is just, it's huge. And the last few weeks it's been rolling for us.
Rolling. I mean, that's an understatement. It's been, it's been like a snowball of momentum. It's been rolling downhill. That's for sure. Over Kentucky and over the Aggies as well. Here is Sark talking about the catalyst of that running game, which is Trey Weissner. You know, we just talked about the last two games for him. He's 344 yards rushing, held against Oklahoma and A&M. You're talking about a guy with over 300 yards rushing in those two games combined. Here is Sark talking about Trey Weissner and what he's meant to that Texas offense.
You know, he earned a lot of trust from us a year ago. You know, this guy, he was not, you know, as much as everyone talks about our five-star recruits and four-star recruits, Trey was not one of those guys. You know, he was a really good high school football player, and the makeup of him, his mentality, and from the day he showed up, all he's done is work his tail off and be a great teammate. And last year on special teams, he earned our trust by the way he covered kicks and did those things. And then training camp, when we had the back-to-back injuries with CJ and Christian, you know, we had to revamp some things of what it was going to look like. And all Trey Weissner did was keep working. And when his opportunities came, he took advantage of them. And I think he was ready to take off earlier in the season, and he gets a little nicked up, kind of gets a hamstring, I think maybe UTSA game, and that slowed him down. And now he's back healthy. I don't know how healthy he is right now after 33 carries, but we'll see. But all he does is work, and all he does is continue just to praise his teammates. It's never about Trey. It's about his teammates. And I think that's why the guys kind of love him so much too and want so much success that he's having.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he embodies that culture that Sark championed so much. I love that he said basically kind of cut his teeth on special teams, earn the trust and earn the respect of his team on special teams, his teammates on special teams, and now he's doing it as the bell cow running back for the Longhorns. Something else that's kind of leading the way for the Longhorns, in addition to the run game, of course, is the defense. Here's Sark, and I think Sark now has tweaked his coaching style, his mentality, tactic, strategy, just a little bit now. He's tweaked it because he knows he can rely on this defense. And here's Sark talking about now what the identity and formula of the team is, knowing that your running game and your defense are leading the way.
Yeah, no, I was just proud of the guys, you know, to line up and run the football the way that we did, I thought was awesome. It's fun to watch, you know, and you know, I get labeled this passing guy all the time, but you guys have been covering us for 4 years now. You know, we run the ball pretty good in critical moments, in late in games especially, and I thought that showed up tonight. And hey, we play really good defense, you know, and we continue to play really good defense, and I thought you know, we did a good job limiting the quarterback of scrambling. I thought we kept the ball in front of us. I thought we tackled really well tonight. And so, all in all, that's kind of who we are, you know. And, again, every game takes on a life of its own. Every game's a little bit different. But when we were playing defense like that, we had a couple of those unfortunate things happen. We were going to lean into the run game and try to shrink this game a little bit and get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, he's right. I mean, once the you know, that disastrous third, I don't know what's going on in the third quarter for Texas in the last couple of games. That's your third quarters are among the worst I've seen, and they've put themselves in a really tough bind in a situation after those third quarters, but the defense has come to save the day. The defense and the running game has come to save the day in both of those instances. Here is Sark talking about the fourth down stops. I think, you know, for the defense, they had an amazing game, an amazing performance, but I don't know if there were two bigger plays or possessions for the Longhorns than those fourth down stops than they got on the goal line, two goal line stands for the Longhorn defense. Here's Sark talking about what that meant for the momentum for the Longhorns.
Yeah, you know, we do this thing in training camp called Red Zone Lockout that we take a lot of pride in. It's a very competitive drill, offense versus defense. And so our guys know, you know, when we start that drill on the 25-yard line as if it's a sudden change, and then the offense is trying to convert it for a score and the defense is trying to stop it. And we do that as a live period, good on good, and we get after it. And I think we develop a mentality in there that, man, we are defending our end zone. And it doesn't matter if they're 6 inches away from that goal line. That's one more snap that we can defend our end zone. And our guys have really done that all year. And they've really done it for two straight years. We were an excellent red zone defense a year ago. We were very good again this year. And it showed up tonight, you know, with some critical stops for us.
Yeah, he's right about that. And, you know, that's, if you go look at that Texas defense, you know, that's really where they shine the most, right, is in those critical moments, situational football. Their situational awareness. I've talked about, used that term about the defense a lot, and it was on display in those goal line stands. It seemed like they knew exactly what the Aggies were doing. You can make the argument on the Aggie side, those were very lackluster plays, lack creativity and innovation. They gave the team no schematic advantage. They just thought, we're going to line up against Texas and we're going to run it right at them. All right, my guy against your guy, my guy's better. I don't know if that's the route I would go against Texas. but let's talk about the offense a little bit. Let's talk about Quinn. A lot of the Longhorn fans are concerned about Quinn and how careless Quinn has gotten with the football. Sometimes they're in the third quarter. And, you know, Sark, you know, even though he had the arch package and Quinn was dealing with an injury, didn't seem like it hurt Quinn, or at least it was hindering Quinn too much because he was very mobile. That was a big question early in the game. Could he be mobile? But after I thought a very impressive first half, the third quarter happened. You get the pick six. You got a fumble by Quinn. Just didn't look very sharp. Here's Sark talking about Quinn's performance and sticking by his third-year starting quarterback in that game.
Yeah, I mean, we just monitored him throughout the week, you know, and anytime you have an ankle injury, you know, early in the week, it's probably not going to look great. But one thing that he kind of progressed throughout the week. And I really challenged him on Thursday. I said, hey, you know, if this is going to go, I really need to see you play football today in practice and not play 7-on-7. And he did it, and he gutted it out. And at that moment, I said, okay, I think he's going to be okay. And I knew we still had two more days to get him as healthy as we could. But I thought he really – he played a good football game tonight. I mean, he a couple really critical scrambles in the game, especially early on. Made some beautiful deep ball passes. The ball to Matt Golden was a heck of a throw down the field. And so – but, you know, guys earn your trust over time. And Quinn has battled through a lot of different adversity throughout his career here with injuries and whatnot. And he earned that right to play ball. And he showed me that he was capable to do it physically. And I'm just proud of him and happy for him that he was able to go out and do it and play the way that he did.
Yeah, and like I said, I thought in the first half he looked really good. I thought he was close to Michigan Quinn in the first half, scrambling, making plays outside the pocket. He was accurate with his throws. And then the third quarter happened. And here's Sark talking about those turnovers from Quinn in the third quarter and how he basically, for Texas, how it made the game a whole lot closer and more dramatic than it needed to be.
No, I mean, a couple bad luck plays. I mean, the tip ball is a tip ball. I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, that happens. And really on the fumble, he's trying to slide and gets kind of really put in an awkward position and the ball comes out. So Quinn's been through a lot. You know, we've been down some pretty good roads together, you know, and we've been down some tough roads together. And so I think he knows where I stand on a lot of things. And I didn't feel like, you know, his body language, his demeanor in the huddle with the guys on the sidelines didn't warrant me having to talk to him. You know, he was engaged. He was still, you know, firing guys up and doing all that. So I felt comfortable with where he was at that time.
Yeah, his game probably should have been a blowout if not for the disastrous third quarter. I think if there was any critical coaching point that I would pull out, I would, you know, be able to extract from the game, it would be Texas was sloppy in critical moments, right? In practice, your practices break down in sessions of what they consider situational football, whatever the critical moments are, red zone, short yardage, you do third down, you do you do 2-minute drill, right? So they just try to break down different potential circumstances and situations that will happen in the game. And red zone is one of them. Texas, both of their turnovers occurred in the red zone. So sloppy in a critical moment. You had a punt block. You practice special teams. Literally, you have special teams periods just to practice punting and covering punts. So that is something specifically you practice, just like red zone, and you had a punt blocked. You missed a field goal late in the first – that's to end the first half. That's also, like I said, part of special teams. You practice those critical moments in the game. So Texas was sloppy in just some of those critical situational moments. And if they just clean that up, that game is a blowout. I mean, they blow them out of the water. It's not even close. But just so you know, that's why coaches practice those critical moments and those really important situations. Because a game like this ends up 17-7. You had a dominating defensive performance, dominating rushing performance on the ground, and ended up being only a 10-point win for you, even though you dominate this game for 3 out of the 4 quarters. Why? Critical moments. Didn't perform in critical moments. Why are the Kansas City Chiefs 11-1 when you play some of the worst football of any team in the NFL through 3 quarters? Because in critical moments, crucial critical moments, their opponents screw up and they don't. Last-minute field goal, 2-minute drill, red zone. Kansas City Chiefs play their best football in those moments. Everybody else, they end up fumbling it, screwing it up somehow. And, yeah, you can say, oh, the Kansas City Chiefs, they're just really lucky. Are they really lucky, or are they just really, really dialed in and focused on those critical moments of situational football?
Now, we will say, defense in critical moments, still elite.
No, it is. Defense but, in critical moments is great.
Offense and special teams.
Offense and special teams.
Both yeah. lost in
and that's not moments. That's not complimentary football.
No.
But that's how a game where you should have won 34-7, yeah. it ends up being 17-7.
Because,
you go, why is this a close game? Critical situational
yeah,
football.
Because if Texas' moments. Defense doesn't play in critical moments, you lose.
Exactly. That's your margin for error now. You have just shrank the margin for error for your defense.
Yes.
It is minuscule
yeah.
because of your lack of focus in those critical moments. So that's all they got to do. If they clean those up, now if you do that against Georgia, you're going to lose. But if you clean those up, you're good. I mean, yeah. In my opinion, I don't think you'll blow Georgia out, but I think you can beat this Georgia team. Even though they're playing better, and even though they got a pretty good antidote for what Texas does. All right, we'll talk about that later, but let's get to the break, and we'll get to the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, and we'll also get to your music theme the other week right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
Back on the Rodcast here on a Smooth Soul Monday, playing you some Smooth Soul to ease you back into the work week, especially if you've been off for the last 4 or 5 days and you maybe got a little used to not having to wake up in the morning and get dressed and go to work, and you've just been relaxing, eating leftovers. A little Smooth Soul to ease you back in to the work week. Let's get to the Big Fat Poll today. Text line is open. It's 512-447-3776 is the text line number, 512-447-3776. And we'll get this posted up on X at the Horn ATX.
Patrick's Big Fat Poll of the Day on the Horn.
Big Fat Poll of the Day. Who was the MVP for Texas against Texas A&M? I got three on here. And I think there's plenty you could put on the defense.
Oh yeah,
I think there's plenty of guys you could put on there, but I'm gonna put three guys on this because I don't know if a fourth will get votes. I don't know how many votes a fourth will get, but I will go. We'll start off. Trey Wisner clearly gets in the MVP conversation.
He's the front runner, right?
33 carries for 186 rushing yards and 2 catches for 21 receiving yards. That's over 200 all-purpose yards in a rivalry game against A&M. That is huge. For a kid that we thought was maybe a complimentary back at best, 200 all-purpose yards carrying the game for Texas offensively in that fourth quarter, like he's been doing week and week again. Vernon Broughton showing him some love, his best game of the season, 4 tackles, 2 sacks, a big fumble recovery there at the end of the game as well. That's a huge play for Vernon Broughton. He was disruptive all game long. And then we'll throw in Michael Taft. Had a really, really good game there. 3 tackles, a tackle for a loss, a pass deflection, and a big INT for Michael Taft. He had another big game as well. You know, he's one of those guys. When you saw Ethan Burke having that, Makuba, even any of the guys from Austin, you feel maybe had a little bit more. That 5-1-2 crew, you feel had a little bit more because they knew a little bit more about this rivalry. And even though they were young, they have family members telling them about this rivalry where – you know, they may have a different connection to it than some others, and they showed up big in these games. But those are the three I'll give you. Trey Wisner, Vernon Broughton, and Michael Taft.
Yeah, that's good. It's hard to say just Trey Wisner right now. But Trey Wisner, Vernon Broughton, it's those two. I love Michael Taft and what he did. Yeah. He did, too. He had a great game. He had a pass breakup. Almost ended up being another pick. Now, if he'd got that other pick, then Michael Taft's probably your guy. But Vernon Broughton, his best game he's ever played. I think Taft has had probably a game as good as the game he played. Vernon Broughton, I've never seen him have a game that good. And it was Trey Wisner's career game. To have your career game in the Texas A&M game, yeah.
Hey, when all eyes are on you.
No, man. And when you came, that's why Trey Wisner gets a little bit more. Because Vernon Broughton, he had a career game, yeah, but, you know, the truth is, if Vernon Broughton didn't have that career game, somebody on that defensive line would have. Because that defense is just so loaded. And they got so many guys that are playing at such a high level. I'm not sure if the offense has anybody else that can fill Wisner's role.
No. You could have probably figured out ways to engineer a little bit more offensively throwing the ball. And we don't know how that ends up. Quinn was playing really well in the first half. So maybe you engineer it and Gunnar Helm comes through and Matthew Gold and they get some big plays. Maybe get an Isaiah Bond big play out of there. But I agree with you. You didn't have to because you had Trey Wisner, and you could trust that versus taking the little bit more unpredictable nature of having to throw the ball and stopping the clock and getting your defense back out there and getting them a little bit more tired and giving Marcel Reed just more chances to break off a big play where he gets outside and they just get a scramble drill for, you know, a touchdown. You know, those can happen is if you just keep giving guys opportunities. I mean, and that's kind of the deal, I think, with the defense when we look at Vernon Broad and Michael Taft. That whole defense played so well.
Everybody played well.
That it's hard to pick out one defensive player because you go, everyone was playing top-notch football in that game, so it's hard to pick one over there. But on the offense, Trey Wisner, clearly head and shoulders, was the guy. And, I mean, you can give love. You gave it earlier, the offensive line. Trevor Goosby, you know, he's definitely your unsung hero of the game.
I agree with that.
Because he's your guy to come in and – and, you know, not show weakness in a moment where, you know, every play at that point, Mike Elko was had to be salivating.
Yep.
You just took out the best player on the team, the first pick in that draft from Texas, and he's gone. And now we've got a guy we can go attack on that side of the football. And they didn't. It didn't matter.
Didn't matter. Still couldn't penetrate. Still couldn't, you know, exploit Texas. I'm with you. And Elko, they got NFL guys over there, man. Those are NFL defensive ends and edges. Shamar Stewart, Shamar Turner. They got Skyrton, who's a really good player. Didn't matter. Texas just rolled downhill on them. So I'm with you. That's Trevor Goosby. I know he's not in the MVP conversation, but he should get some love because that game could have gone all types of wrong if he had been, you know, less reliable or if he wasn't up to the task. That could have been bad because then that'd shut down a lot of your – you know, your passing game overall at that point still early in the game because that happened. I believe that happened like in the first half of the first quarter, right?
Yeah.
Didn't that happen like in the first quarter?
It was quick, It was early.
It was early in that game. I remember that.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was second half in sweats.
Yeah. So it was really early in the game when he went down. And, man, they had 2.5 quarters to take advantage of that. And I think they realized early on, okay, that's not going to be a point of weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fool's errand to keep attacking that. So, you're right. I think it's going to be Trey Wisner. I think he'll run away with this thing. But Vernon Broughton should get some love. He should get some love there, no doubt. Who's the third one, was it?
Michael Taft. Michael Taft.
Yeah, Taft's going to get the – you know what? It is the Austin connection. Trust me, the Westlake folks will make sure he's well represented there. Taft Daddy. You guys know I'm a big Taft Daddy fan, too. All right, we'll get to some NFL news notes and nuggets as well. We got that coming up. Like I said, we also have a big announcement. We'll get to that, I promise you. There's so much football to get to. I don't want to waste any time. So we'll get to Texans on the other side. Texans, they are who we thought they were, especially even against the Jags. Cowboys continue to win. At least there's some going. The Cowboys are fighting. They may not necessarily – I don't know if they're fighting for. I don't know if there is – anything that actually they're going to win. But the Cowboys are still, you know, playing for pride right now. We'll talk about that, their win over the Giants. DeMarvion Overshown, he might get his wish because Micah Parsons now is also going to advocate that my man Demo get his wish. So we'll talk about that, too, coming up on the other side. We got Raj Rant. Then we'll dive back into the Texas A&M matchup. We'll get to some of the X's and O's, some of the things that I saw on my rewatch of the game yesterday. All of that and more coming up right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.